Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Spoken Heard. I'm Susan Dobie Chase, and this is a forum for spoken word artists. Today, I am thrilled to bring you the extremely talented woman with a voice. Her name is Jessica Helen Lopez, and she is from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hello, how are you, Jessica?
I'm great. Thank you, Susan. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Thank you very, very much for that. I know that you are currently the Albuquerque Poet Laureate. And I was hoping maybe we could address just what that means and what's coming about from that.
Okay, yeah, sure, wonderful. Actually, I'm on the cusp of handing over my laurels to the next Poet Laureate for the city of Albuquerque, which will be the third Poet Laureate. A lot of people worked very hard as an organization and a committee to bring this post to fruition. I'd like to say I'm the first Chicana Poet Laureate, but then again, I'm the second Poet Laureate. And our first Poet Laureate was Joaquin Bellamy. I had some really big shoes to fill. But it's almost been 2 years, and that's as long as the duration of the post. And so nominations are being accepted now. You must be nominated by fellow community peers. And then you apply to be the Poet Laureate, because it's not just about the poetry, though that is obviously an integral part. It's also about the community participation and engaging others in poetry in public spaces. So within the next 2 months, they'll be selecting a new Poet Laureate. And though it's been a very fun ride, I'm excited to see who will hold that ambassadorial post next. That's kind of where I'm at right now in this new year of 2016.
If you're in Albuquerque, where can you vote for the next Poet Laureate?
Well, you know, you can always go online and just check out our program, especially for those cities who are open to adopting something similar to it. I think it's really important that cities and states and, of course, you know, the country, United States of America, have a Poet Laureate. It's all about the sustainability of creative words and expression and empowerment. But you can always go online to Albuquerque's Poet Laureate program. It's really easy to find and find updates and information. Now, in order to nominate someone for the Poet Laureateship, you must yourself reside in Albuquerque. So they can't necessarily take outside nominations, but you can always give your support by going on Facebook and liking the Facebook page and kind of keeping an update on what's going on with the committee, the organization, and definitely the Poet Laureate. What's that Poet Laureate up to? I had the opportunity to do a lot of things under the auspices of being the Poet Laureate, including, you know, going out of country. I was able to go to an international poetry festival in Nicaragua this last year, represent Albuquerque. Yeah, it was wonderful. I can't wait to go back. And I found out their area code is 505, which is exactly Albuquerque. So it was like meant to be. It was meant to be. But it's been such a wild and beautiful ride. You know, I've just been so honored and privileged to hold that post as a Chicana, as a woman.
Excellent. I'm so happy that you were named the Poet Laureate. And I think that from the things that I've seen and the things that I've read, you've just been amazing in that position. And I want to, you know, offer you all my congratulations for,
Thank you. Yes, indeed, for
receiving the post, but also handling it so beautifully. That's really wonderful. And you deserve lots of credit.
Ah, thank you very much. I'm going to miss this post, but, you know, I will continue to work on ongoing projects that came from this post, including publishing youth poets. That was my project proposal, because that's what I've always done. I'm an educator. I teach sixth grade, and I also teach at a collegiate level, And so it seemed to go hand in hand whenever I did apply for the laureate 2 years ago that I should work to publish young voices. And so that first anthology has come out. It's called Kids with Causes by Swimming with Elephants Publications. We have one more scheduled to come out before the post transitions into a new poet laureate. But that's something that I want to continue to strive to do, is create those safe spaces for other voices, poetic voices, and especially that of young people. So if anything, this last 2 years has kind of clarified my role within this community and the community at large, and as a mother, poet, and educator. So it's been a lot of growth for me personally, but I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much for your congratulations. I feel very happy and proud of the work that I've done in the last 2 years.
And that shows. Yes, it shows. If people want to get a hold of the collection that you just talked of with the younger people's voices, where might they get a copy of that?
Yeah, good question. They can always go online to the publisher page. It's an independent press founded and run by Katrina Garaccio. She's also a very close friend of mine. We're kind of like partners in crime for the last 10 years. And I really support her press, you know, as a woman who founded a press and now has something like over 30 titles in the last 3 years is quite a feat. So if you were looking for the book, it's called Kids with Causes, an Anthology of Youth Voices. And you can go online to Swimming with Elephants Publications. You can also find it
Swimming
on Amazon.
Swimming with Elephants, that's ISBN. Lovely.
Yeah, isn't it? It's beautiful. And all the imagery that's related to it is wonderful. Her website is dope. It's so wonderful. And you can check out Kids with Causes and then all other kinds of titles. And she does publish people outside of the state of New Mexico. Jennifer Hudgens was just recently published by her. So was Dominique Christina, Women of the World Poetry Slam National Champ, twice, I think, now, or 3 times or 5 million times. I don't know if she's won that title. So she's amazing. But so she publishes writers, not just from New Mexico, but from all over the country.
Wow. All right. So you guys have poets and those who would like to read excellent poetry. Look that up, because I think that it sounds really great, especially for people like me who are also teachers. I think that having resources with other people's young voices that can be read and heard and used as inspiration, it really pays off a great deal for teachers as well. I was wondering if I might be able to prevail upon you at this point to read us one of your poems.
Sure. Yeah, no problem. I have one ready up and ready on my laptop to read. This one was just recently published in Drunk in a Midnight Choir, and I was notified that not this particular poem, but one of the four poems that was published is up for a Pushcart Prize. So I was over the moon when I heard about that, because I've never been nominated before.
Congratulations. What a huge accomplishment.
I'm pumped. I was ecstatic. And then I'm like, I told my daughter, Mia, Mama just got nominated for a Pushcart Prize. And she's like, what? That. I was like, well, it's something very cool. She's like, you're going to get a push cart? And I was like, okay, let me explain this a little bit more. So I do have a poem that, again, like I said, was published by the good people of Drunk in a Midnight Choir, and it's titled When Depression and Marriage Happen. Blame it on the sad summer air and the pale yellow light of late afternoon when the bees swathe the lavender bush and the buzzing drives me mad. I have nothing left to prepare in the kitchen or clean in the mudroom, and so I busy myself with the hatred of you and me, the undeserved life we share. We exchange paltry kisses upon your arrival, our lips feign the ooh and ah of our reunion. There is real kindness there, but I never let it in. In 1978, I was born a wild ram, zodiac symbol for aggression and stubborn to a damned fault. A squall of amniotic fluid and clenched limbs, gray-skinned like the dead. I was cut lengthwise from my mother's gut. You know, now I was never born at all. Blame it on the stillborn air of today's fever, the mid-June monsoon that flirts but never delivers, the rusted branches of the Chinese dash that do not bud. Our front yard looks like our first year of marriage, pristine and proper in all the right places, a cozy patch of dirt. 1983, I entered school a tamed dove. Pigtails wound in yarn and cheap plastic shoes adorned my long, eager feet. I let him touch me between the legs at least 5 times and told no one, not even the soft-hearted teacher whom I loved. I remember laughing and swatting his hand, playing keep away across the heat of the black tarred playground, and my legs melted mid-run. You know now I was wicked, but didn't mean to be. You know now I never knew the language of no. Blame it on my small voice. Blame it on my callous parents. Blame it on the migration patterns of this heart. Blame it on my drunk brother. Blame it on the red-cheeked smear of shame. Blame it on the melancholia and the pendulum of my mood swinging, swinging, swinging. Blame it on me. I could have been a bigger, brighter version of myself, but blame it on this and blame it on that and blame you and always remember to blame them. In 1990, I called the cops on my father at least 6 times. Those boys in blue were dizzying disappointment, not so much as my mother, though, dripping in her sorrow. In 1996, I kissed 15 boys in one night just because. In 1998, a late-term abortion. In 2000, I wrote a poem and then buried it. In 2001, I swallowed a ball of light I named the moon. In 2002, a baby broke from between my legs. You know now that motherhood is a martyrdom. You know now who I am. There is no blame in all of the world that could help me unlearn the things that I have learned. Blame and sadness are a rootless endeavor, forgiveness even more burdensome. Instead, I want to float, hover above my body, airless, into the pale yellow heat. Let you know that I tried, I was trying, but those bees, those endless, incessant bees, keep at their mournful choir of buzzing, their pitiful song of you. Me.
Hmm. Yeah, congratulations. That's absolutely beautiful. Where did that come from, Jessica?
Several sources of memory and trauma and the idea of writing through trauma, which is something that I especially deal with as far as within my own personal writing or when I host a writing workshop. You know, which comes with a whole slew of responsibilities, like, you know, keeping track and care of triggers and whatnot. But a lot of that was, always starts off as a stream of consciousness. I write it, I say it out loud over and over. I add more, I add more, I add more. I start from the top, I read aloud, I add more, I add more, I add more. And I actually go through a type of revision process as I'm writing it. And then even later, when I read it out loud, let's say in a public sphere, an open mic. I hardly slam these days. I hardly compete anymore, but I'll even go back and change words then. But I usually do try to publish most of my work. But it does come from a place where, you know, you're just kind of digging for those healing points that you can write through, which is really the essence of writing through trauma. And so, and a lot of that is confessionalism, you know, if you really wanted to categorize it in that certain way. I feel like I write in a lot of different veins, you know, that might be not something that I share in front of my sixth grade poet, right? But it might be something that I would share with my students in my Borderlands Poetics class at the Chicano Studies Department, where I also teach. And it definitely might be something I'll put away because I don't need it right then and there. You know, and that might actually trigger some surfacing things I don't want to at the time. Then I'll pull it out again when I need it. Right now, I need it. You know, right now I need this poem. I need it. I've written it, and I need to share it right now. But we'll see how it goes in the future. Who knows?
Wow. So you're teaching some pretty diverse groups that brings up, you know, sixth grade and then working on the collegiate level. How do those things seem similar, and how are they also different?
Well, tell you what, whether you're in the sixth grade or you are a, you know, 21-year-old junior at college or senior or whatever, everybody loves tongue twisters. And so there's actually a lot of similarities, I think, between teaching a group of youth poets and adult co-eds. I always try to engage them with things that they can interact with, right? So I always bring out my poetic toolbox, which is like tongue twisters. Mm-hmm. Let's warm up. Let's get to know one another. Let's talk about, a poetic device of alliteration and repetition. It always gets people laughing and smiling. And that's always, I think, a really nice place to start. Because who knows, we might be writing about being 1 inch tall, inspired by Shel Silverstein. You know, and you could be in sixth grade, you could be 25. Or we could be talking about, something like a little bit more serious, like colonialism, which does occur a lot in where I teach sixth grade, because it's a Native American community school, an old Indian governmental boarding school that has been transformed into, this indigenous educational model by all the 19 Pueblos here. So we talk about the tough stuff, too, through poetry. Teacher speak, we just grade level it out. So those topics can be very similar between an 11-year-old and a 25-year-old, oppression and inequality and injustice, but also resistance and resiliency. And it's all through the lens of poetry. And so actually I think that young poets and adult poets are quite similar. It's just a matter of how much information we can cover within an hour. It's what it is. Because 11-year-olds need to get up and run around a little bit. But don't we all? So, I don't think that there's so much of a disparity as much as the content is very similar, the fun of the art and the need of those creative elements as a writer, as a poet, those are all very, very similar. You know, it's just that, maybe our lexicon is a little bit different. That's all. You know, so I just kind of map it out in that way.
Well, that's fantastic. And it's good to know that there's so much similar and between the two groups. I think that's important for people to realize, is just that we all have our stories to tell, no matter how old you are, no matter what that story is. I think that the thing for poets is like taking a snapshot of a moment in time and knowing what to put in that little frame of the moment. And I think that indeed is something that, transverses both those kinds of things for both adults and children.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And recognizing that we speak in poetry every day. It's one thing to say, well, what's a metaphor? And then you actually utilize it in your daily conversation and you say, oh, ha, I just spoke in metaphor. Yes, well yes, you did. You know, poetry is really all around you. It's in your favorite songs that you hear. It's in the conversation that you speak. And it's the exchange of those stories that keep us connected. I'm reminded of that every day for sure. You know, as a teacher, I'm also a student, and it's always in a meta-narrative way, but I'm always looking for opportunities to say, ha, that was a poem right there. Yeah, look what you just did. Young sixth grader, you spoke in simile. But it is also the ability to capture those snapshots, like you said. And as a writer, when you hone in on that, your craft, you're able to do that a little bit more so. Ah, this is poem worthy. Mm-hmm. I want to write this down. I didn't think it was before, but now I know, yes, it is. Let me capture this moment,
Right. One of my favorite things to say to my students is, I think there's a poem in there somewhere. And automatically, you can see the wheels start turning. It's really a beautiful process. We're more than halfway. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
More than halfway through the interview, and I would love to have you read another piece for us.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. I have one ready. This poem is from a small chapbook put together, once again, by Swimming with Elephants Publications. It's called The Language of Bleeding, and it was poems for the Festival Internacional de Poesía de Granada, Nicaragua. So that was the festival that I went to in Granada, alongside Richard Blanco, and he was our inaugural presidential poet. It was one of four Americans that got to travel to Nicaragua, Granada, Managua, and to read my poems. So they were actually translated in Spanish. I am not completely fluent, what you call a border dwelling Pocha. So I'm going to read it to you in English. But if you were to pick up this poem, it's also translated into Spanish as all the poems within this book. So this poem is called "To the Woman Who Has Become My Daughter's Stepmother." Your hatred for me is a biblical error, a misstep or a 12-year tragedy I should have seen coming. You probably don't know this, but when your man was my man, he spat on my face once. I allowed the sinewy rope of saliva to stay there a bit. Lucid in the corner pocket of my eye, the thin ridge of my nose glistened, opaque, a rivulet of starry-eyed diamonds above the dovetail of my lip, a melting pearl. My daughter has my lips. It was the end, the grand finale that all historical tyrants yearn for, the last act of warfare or genocide or mass blonde dive into a suicidal fuck it all, I've lost, Hail Mary. You probably don't know this either, but he ran. He ran from my doorstep shrill with fright like a boy who lit the wrong end of a black cat firecracker. Odd how I never thought to call on the cops. Strange how our instincts can be pulverized to a dead end, a pulp of echoless nerves. Live wires hollowed and sleepy-eyed for so many years, but you, with your terrible silences, your taciturn cheekbones, high and pointed, not unlike my own, so colorless your glance in a double-barrel shotgun where your vocal cords would be, buckshot, choked back, and the smoke amasses in my belly, coiled like a sleeping snake, translucent, but very much there, very much real. It is not enough to call you trigger. You hate me the way he hated me. It makes me hate myself. Until I remember that I don't. Hate me, that is. That is an old bone I no longer worry. To the woman who, after all these winding and unwinding years, has become my daughter's stepmother. Reminder, her body is not a target. Her spirit not a pincushion for your sharpened daggers. She is not your misplaced misanthropic antidote. When you have imbibed all that is left to observe that thing that resembles compassion, remember, when you have wrung the last dark waters from the slack wash towel of his heart. Remember, my daughter is not you, is not your myopic version of me, is not him, a remote and angry island. She is fidelity. She is deliberate song and stretch of bone. She is the impetus of a holy and naive love. And lest you forget, remember, her mother is a blade, your blood itching to be pulled to the surface. And there you
wow.
go.
Wow. There's something. So again, true story, right? Do you always write from a perspective of yourself, or do you ever enter into persona with your work?
Oh, I actually do enter into persona with my work. That is something that I've been exploring for about the last, I would say, 2 years. I recently went to Kentucky for the Women's Writers Conference. And before that summer, I developed a persona writing workshop, you know, and so I facilitated that workshop in smaller arenas around town and in Taos, New Mexico, before I took it there. And I have written persona poems. For instance, I have a poem called Diana the Huntress, and it's through the perspective of the woman who shot and killed two bus drivers in Mexico because they were notorious for raping and dismembering the maquiladoras, the women who traveled to the factories there along the border in Juarez. And though she was never found, she was never taken to jail, she left a letter, and it went to the AP Wire about why she did it, and called herself a vigilante, and she's become kind of like this folk hero. And I just thought, I have to write through her perspective. And so I did that. I have poems where I've written through the perspective of a child playing in the playground, not quite ready for womanhood and what all that entails, and just kind of saying, no, I'm not ready for that. And here, look at me. I'm the queen of monkey bars. And that too, because it's very physical. And then other persona poems. So, you know, Patricia Smith, queen of persona, you know, is one of my favorite writers. And so I've taken a look at other persona poems, you know, that I admire, especially that of many spoken word poems like Denise Froman's about her grandmother,
yes,
through the voice of her grandmother, or Carrie Jackson through the voice of a slave, you know, who was separated from the love of his life, his wife, because he was a slave and they could do that to him. You know, I would always been enamored by the persona poem. And then as the poet laureate, I've been asked to write occasional poems for lots and lots of city events. For instance, I'm the poet in residence at the Albuquerque Museum of Art and History. I'm allowed to walk through the halls of this gorgeous museum, take a look at all the art, sit with it, and then write about it. And so a lot of that is this kind of ekphrastic poetry writing. So I don't only always just write through my very own first-person point of view, confessional writing. I challenge myself with persona, and there are times, too, just, you know, I'm a professional writer. I'm asked to write for the reopening of the convention center, you know, in downtown Albuquerque. And so that's always a challenge, and it's lots of fun, you know, to kind of go and harvest what, you know, these images, these thoughts, these little snippets of words that I want to put together for this particular occasion. It varies on what I will write about, but I think those confessional poems are the most healing for me. And so when I get an opportunity to read them, I definitely take the chance, you know, like today, like this morning.
Yes. And you mentioned going to a women's writers conference. I know, too, that Albuquerque just got done hosting this year the Women of the World Poetry Festival. And although we don't have a ton of time to talk about it, because I'd like to have you read us out of the show, tell me about that.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, my gosh. I call her Hefa. Jasmine Senna Cuffey, she's also my homegirl here in Albuquerque. She went to the WELPS 2014, and she said she had a vision, like literally, like almost like Jesus Cristo in a tortilla, but she had this vision that we must bring Women of the World Poetry Slam National to Albuquerque. She called me up. She's like, will you do it? Will you help me? And I said, yes. Fuck yeah. I will do it. I will help you. So there was a core group of women, including Amanda Sutton and Erin Northern, and myself and Jasmine, and then many, 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 many others. And it took about a year to plan.
Yes.
We got very, very close with one another in order to bring WELPS to Albuquerque. And we really wanted it to reflect our cultural diversity here. So we began with an opening ceremonies and a blessing from the Sweet Nations dancers at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center. It took place at various venues like El Shante, which is Casa de Cultura, and even the downtown library. So we wanted to get the community involved and engaged. Like, here comes poetry. Poetry like maybe you've never seen before through the lens of women writers, you know, their perspective.
I hate to interrupt you, Jessica, but
you're
going to read us out of the show,
I
need to refocus. And I just wanted to say thank you one more time for being my guest. And ladies and gentlemen, one last time, here's Jessica Helen Lopez.
Oh, thank you so very much. Very quickly, this poem is called Thought Woman, and I wrote it for the women of the Metro Detention Center. Thought Woman created tortillas and flesh like masa, and perhaps she thought of violence too, but I will never know. She thought of the sex of me all apple and dew, stitched a burlap body, brown of course, and blue sand into it. This to be the me of me, my insides tierra and just a drop of moisture. She took four long ropes of her hair, onyx like Moctezuma's eyes, and threaded the burlap girl boy body. She named me desert. She named me una esperanza de las estrellas. She named me Zilonin. Thought woman sang me into this world to let me cry, to bleed, to give babies to this land, invoke dream stories, to inscribe the world with my something. My something is bone song, is holler woman, is thin finger and toes the hue of a waterless dirt. When the sun woke, I was young, closer to the earth and hair to my waist. By the midwinter of day, I had peeled a baby from my womb, shorn my scalp and grew rivers on my belly. When the inevitable ink of night comes, I will unbind my stitches, let the sand run back home, give back this hair to Thought Woman, so she may daughter someone new.
Thank you again, Jessica Helen Lopez. This is
Thank
Susan
you so
W.
Much,
Chase.
Susan.
You're welcome. This is Spoken Heard. And until next week, Be kind to one another.